What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer. And you have just stepped inside my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, it's all about my top five favorite announcements from the PlayStation Showcase event, so let's talk about it and dive right into the episode, my news catch of the week. Gamers, it's been a couple of years now, believe it or not, since we had a full-on dedicated PlayStation Showcase event. Now, don't get me wrong, we've had State of Plays, many of State of Play events from Sony over the last couple of years, but a full-on hour-plus PlayStation Showcase event, it's been a couple of years. So, admittedly, going into this most recent Showcase event, it was just, for me, the hype level, it was up there. Now, don't get me wrong, I also, over the years, have learned to kind of temper myself and make sure that I go into these events, whether it's PlayStation, Xbox, Ubisoft, whoever it is, with somewhat of as close to realistic expectations as possible. Because for a long time, I honestly set myself up for massive disappointment from these things by looking and expecting and hoping for the biggest, craziest announcements ever and walking away with, honestly, maybe one or two of those, and then everything else is kind of like, oh, okay, all right, cool. But it felt like a disappointment to me. So I'll tell you my overall feelings on whether I felt disappointed or not on this specific Showcase event at the end of the segment. But going into this event, there was a few things I wanted to see and some things that I got out of that I wanted to see, but some things I also did not see that I was hoping for. That will be at the end of the episode in my Captain's Decree segment. This segment is all about the top five games that were shown off within that hour plus time span that just had me going nuts. And the first game that I have to start with is one that was a surprise, one that I did not think of or see coming, to be honest. Definitely not at the PlayStation Showcase event, and I'll explain why here in a sec. That first game I want to talk about is Alan Wake 2. Now, the reason why specifically I was kind of surprised and would not have expected it to debut in the way that it did, gameplay, release date, all that, at a PlayStation Showcase event is because the original Alan Wake game was an Xbox 360 exclusive. Microsoft actually paid for the publishing of that game, and it was a 360 exclusive all those years ago. Now, obviously, the remaster had come out more recently on PlayStation consoles. It was probably a way to get PlayStation gamers, if they hadn't already played the original, a means to play it on a PlayStation console so that they couldn't feel or wouldn't feel necessarily lost when the second game came out later this year that we found out specifically now the date. I can't wait to tell that to you. But Alan Wake 2 shocked me when it showed up because of that reason, one. But secondly, I had completely forgotten about it, to be honest with you. It debuted at the Game Awards a couple years ago, not this past December, but December of 21 is when we first got our first glimpse into Alan Wake 2, the confirmation that it even existed, and that it was, at that time, a ways off. So to get the first real trailer for it right now, and to flash forward to this event and actually get gameplay, a release date, a better understanding of what we can kind of expect from the story, man, I was super stoked. And if you didn't get a chance to check out the trailer, definitely all these games, check out the trailers. In my opinion, they were all really, really good. There's some honorable mentions that I'll put in here too at the end of the segment that I definitely think you should still check out, even though they weren't in my top five. But Alan Wake 2, man, I mean, the story, I don't know if you know about it. Alan Wake is a writer. He's a horror writer, a mystery thriller kind of guy. He goes to the town of Bright Falls in the first game and basically seems to get stuck in his own head. Like, there's almost an alternate dimension to Bright Falls, kind of like a Twilight Zone kind of thing going on. And the enemy types in the game, I mean, it was a very unique experience where you had to use light to help combat the enemies. It wasn't just about get as many bullets as possible and try to take out the enemies with good clean shots. No, you actually had to drain essentially a shield of shadow from the enemies by shining light on them and then use your ammo afterwards. So it was just It was a very unique experience. I loved it. You guys, if you've listened to my show for a while, you know I am an absolute obsessive fan of anything horror. Alan Wake was one of my favorite games of the 360 era. I played through it at least three or four times to get all 1000G of the achievements and the gamer score in the game. I absolutely loved it. American Nightmare was an Xbox Live Arcade title that was kind of like an epilogue of an experience, and it was gameplay-wise a little bit different than the base game of Alan Wake. But to see what this game is, and we had already been told by Remedy, the developer, that Alan Wake 2 was going to go full on horror, fully embrace that horror aspect of the genre. And it definitely looks like that's the case in this trailer, because I got to tell you, even I didn't actually physically jump, but I almost did. There is a scene where you play as the one FBI agent, Saga, it looks like is her name, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm not 100% sure. But she's very slowly going through what looks to be some kind of convenience store, and bam, bursting through the wall is this big dude that has almost like a cultish looking outfit on with deer antlers. And oh man, I mean, it just definitely looks like the tone of the game is going to be terrifying. My wife, who was a huge fan of the original game and played through American Nightmare as well, has already said after watching that trailer, she's like, yep, nope, not doing it. She does not have the anxiety level to be able to deal with that kind of tension. So she typically doesn't play horror games. So she's not going to play this one, which I'm sad about for sure, because I know she loved that first game. But I get it. So my point is, you can just visibly tell the difference in the tone and the fully embracing of the horror aspects of it. You're going to have two different playable characters. You can play as Alan, of course, but you're also going to be playing as that FBI detective. She gets sent to Bright Falls looking into a different murder that has happened there. That's what draws her there. Then she kind of gets intertwined with the Alan Wake mystery. Alan is also in some kind of alternate dimension, it would seem, and there's different things going on with him. And there's just a lot of good stuff that looks like I cannot wait to absorb myself into. So when it comes down to it, the big reveal for me was, all right, when can we expect to play this game? And as of this point in time, the announced release date for Alan Wake 2 is going to be October 17th of this year, 2023, on PlayStation 5, Xbox, and PC. So I cannot absolutely wait to get my hands on this game. It's my most anticipated out of everything that was announced or shown off at this most recent event. Now, number two, it's got to be another surprise game. And this is why I put it at the number two spot, because it was such a surprise for me. The second most anticipated game for me coming out of the show is Dragon's Dogma 2. Now, I did not play the first Dragon's Dogma, so you may be like, well, how is this your most anticipated next to Alan Wake 2 if you never played the first one? It's a valid question. Well, my son and my brother-in-law were massive fans of that original game, again, on the 360. And my son actually played through it a second time when they came out with the remaster on the Xbox One. That's how much he loved the game and how much highly he has talked about the game over the years. So I actually had an opportunity to discuss this game with him yesterday and look at the trailer with him. And kind of he was able to speak to the gameplay and the different types of combat and all the different nuances that made this game very unique for him, kind of explained to me what was going on with the story in the first game and what may be expected of the story in the second game. So it sounds very interesting. I'll just put it to you that way, because story-wise, I couldn't tell you what's going on based on the trailer I saw of Dragon's Dogma 2 at this showcase event. But I can tell you that graphically, it looked awesome. Gameplay-wise, the combat looked insane. Physics-wise, being able to shoot out wooden bridges and have massive trolls that are coming at you as enemies fall with the bridge and the way the bridge pieces collapse. And oh man, it just looked awesome. And then just really looking into the slower moments where it showcased different villages and looked like an inn or a bar or something like that that the character was walking through and talking to villagers. I mean, honestly, it just looks like an awesome, awesome RPG and a fun time. Now, we did not get a release date for this game, but I'm all right with that. Hopefully, it means that it's coming out later than sooner, because, man, there's just so many games starting to stack up now for me in the fall. I don't really have a whole lot of room left, if any, for any more new games to be announced for coming out this fall. But Dragon's Dogma 2 looks really, really awesome. Can't wait to check it out. Number three on this list is going to be Metal Gear Solid Delta Snake Eater. Now, if you didn't know already, the delta is the symbol, the triangle symbol that is part of the logo. And the reason why the Konami developer said that they chose to put delta in there is the word delta, it just kind of means like a restart or a beginning. And that's kind of what they're looking at with Metal Gear Solid Delta Snake Eater. So obviously Snake Eater, it was Metal Gear Solid 3 when it first released on the PS2. And this is a remake of that game, which, let's be honest, gamers, we've known for a long time that this was coming. It's been rumored and put out there. And next to being 100% confirmed by Konami, it's always been something that we knew was probably coming down the pipeline. And even before this event, this show, there it was right out there online everywhere saying, oh, this is going to be a reveal. But it was confirmed it's not a PlayStation 5 exclusive. That was one thing that a lot of people were thinking and assuming, that it was going to be a PS5 exclusive. It is not. Now, I will say for me, I'm all about some DualSense functionality, as I stated in one of my more recent Captain's Quarters episodes when I talked about the possibility of Konami going exclusive with their games to the PS5 and with Sony. But bottom line, Metal Gear Solid Delta Snake Eater looked amazing. Now, granted, we didn't get an actual in-game in-engine trailer. We just got a really cool, kind of a circle of life looking trailer is the way I know how to describe it. Because you start out and the camera is on like these ants and it kind of zooms out. And as it slowly zooms out, you see the ant army that are basically feasting on this dead frog that then gets picked up by a flying bird who's swooping over this kind of swamp area, that gets attacked by a snake who then gets attacked by an alligator. And then ultimately we see Big Boss, Snake himself, in that brush right there nearby in the swamps with the camouflage. And if you have played Snake Eater, if you know anything about Snake Eater, that game was phenomenal for so many reasons. But one of the really cool things about it was the implementation of the camouflage, like the face paints and using your environment to blend in and using animals for, you know, skinning them and eating them to stay alive and to heal yourself, all kinds of these different things. So it was very much in tune, the trailer was, with what that gameplay is all about in that specific game. And it looks like they're going to be honoring that 100%. Now, Konami did say it is a remake, but, and they're going to stay true to the bulk of what Hideo Kojima did in that original game, but it's obviously much more updated for today's expectations. So I can't wait to see more details on it. They did the day after the event release some screenshots of actual in-game footage. It looks gorgeous. It looks amazing. I cannot wait to see more and just get my hands on it, to be honest with you. But it's probably going to be a while. We didn't get a release date. I am expecting it'll probably come sometime next year. But we did get something release date announcement-wise in regards to the Metal Gear Solid series. And that is the Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 1, which is very interesting, and I'll speak to that in just a second. But Volume 1, so it's going to include the original Metal Gear 1 and Metal Gear 2 games from way back in the day. And we're also going to see Metal Gear Solid 1, 2, and 3, all part of this same package. And I got to tell you, again, as I mentioned in one of my most recent Captain's Quarters episodes, I'm a huge fan of this series. I'm actually very interested in checking this out because I never finished Metal Gear Solid 2. I never actually played the original Metal Gear games. So it's actually got me kind of excited to check these out. We didn't get a specific release date, just the fall of this year is when we can expect to hopefully get our hands on it. But that was some pretty cool, interesting information as well. Now, number 4 on my top 5 games of this event is going to be Assassin's Creed Mirage. And that game, oh man, I have been very much waiting for the actual specific release date for a long time now. And we finally got it with the trailer that they revealed, Ubisoft did, at this event. October 12th is when we can finally get our hands on controlling Bassem and his origins as an assassin in the Order. And we got to see not just the release date, obviously, but it was a gameplay, an in-engine trailer. The only thing that we've seen on Mirage up to this point was a cinematic trailer. So to see it in-engine and running and seeing the gameplay and the fluidity of it just looked awesome. I mean, the combat looked awesome. Bassem looked like he has some pretty badass moves with his swords, flipping around, just the way he's swinging them. Oh, that looked awesome. I don't know if it's actually going to be available in the game, but typically on these, even the cinematic trailers for Assassin's Creed games, a lot of times you can do in the actual game what they show you in any of the trailers. So there's one part where Bassam drops down on a guy, stabs him, grabs him, wraps a rope around his neck, and then jumps off of the side of a building holding him. So I'm just very curious if you can do things like that. And just the world of Baghdad looked gorgeous. I can't wait to explore the world of Baghdad and the surrounding desert area. It's just going to be an awesome, awesome time. The trailer was, of course, monologued by Bassam's mentor. The Assassin's Creed universe, it's going to feel good to get back into it with a brand new, fresh game. I love Valhalla. I loved a lot of the DLC and expansion stuff. But, man, it's going to be nice to get into a brand new world, a brand new assassin. And even kind of going back to just the core basics of the Assassin's Creed gameplay and franchise for this game, as opposed to a massive open world, it's going to be kind of nice. So I'm very much looking forward to it. Was excited to finally get that release date. Even though gamers, for perspective, October 12th is Assassin's Creed Mirage. It's only 5 days before Alan Wake 2. So October, man, it's just, there's going to be a packed fall. But my fifth and final game of the top five, it's got to be Spider-Man 2. Now, you may be wondering why it's number five at the bottom of my top five list. Well, to be honest with you, it's ultimately because we didn't get a specific release date. All we got at the end of the trailer was fall 2023. And we already kind of knew that. It's already been kind of put out there forever that this game was coming fall of 23. So we didn't learn anything that we didn't already know. Now, I will say, last year, 2 years ago, maybe now, I think it was the last showcase event where they announced the announcement trailer for Spider-Man 2 first debuted. And when we got that, I mean, we knew that Venom was going to be in it, Kraven, Miles, and Peter Parker. We didn't know exactly how all that was going to play out gameplay-wise. So to finally get an in-game, in-engine gameplay trailer, like a 10-minute clip of gameplay, that was pretty awesome. Before I get to that, though, I just want to say that the whole sequence started out with Kraven and really kind of introducing him as the main villain of this game. And I just thought he was awesome. I'm loving Insomniac's interpretation of Kraven. I think it's perfect so far from what he is in the comics and what I believe or see him to be from the comics. I can't wait to see the entirety of his character throughout the course of this game. But as we go into the gameplay portion of it, I mean, the big highlight for me was the black suit and Peter wearing the black suit, the combat, just the different move sets. It looked like that you're going to be able to do wearing that black suit. Oh my God, it just looked awesome. The fluidity of the frame rate, I mean, just everything. It was awesome. Just as rumored, you start out, the sequence gameplay that they showed was in Queens, which is where Peter is from and lives. And you're in a neighborhood setting, you know, doing some combat there. And then obviously you switch back to Miles. Looks like one of the possibilities that I discussed in a previous episode, good friend of the show, Logan Phoenix from Graveyard Gamer. Check out his podcast, a great podcast right here on Spotify. If you like my show, you'll like his, I promise. Him and I were talking about it as well, and we had said this a while ago. Well, is it going to be where you can choose to play as either or Peter or Miles? Or are you going to have the option, like at the beginning of the main menu, right? Choose the Peter story or the Miles story, or is it going to be like Grand Theft Auto 5? In-game, you can choose and alternate between all the different, you know, back and forth however you want, or is it going to, the game is going to do it for you at certain points? Looks like, based on this trailer, the game is going to do it for you at certain points, which I'm all right with. I would be okay, honestly, with any of those three different options, but it looks like it's going to be where the game automatically transfers you back and forth between whichever Spider-Man they want you to be in a given story moment. So, either way, looks great. Miles, you got to show off some of his powers in that trailer. That was really cool looking. Lizard, we got the... Oh man, you didn't get the whole visuals of the Lizard in this game, but the way it looks like it's going, I cannot wait to see the rest of the full-on interpretation again of Insomniac's Lizard, just like with Kraven. So I thought they did a great job with the interpretation of Spidey's Rogues Gallery in the first two Spider-Man games between Miles and the original game. So I can't wait to see what they do with this game. I just really wish that we would have gotten that release date. Now, that was the top five games that were from this showcase event that were most exciting to me. But another thing I wanted to talk about real quick was the portable device, Project Q, as Jim Ryan named it. So there's not an official name for it yet, but Project Q is the portable PlayStation device that was rumored to be in development in some way, shape, or form. Let me just clarify, it's not a PlayStation Portable. It's not a PSP. So if you're thinking of PSP, PS Vita, you know, the next, you know, generation of that, that is not what this is at all. According to what we saw very, very briefly and what was said by Jim Ryan, this is an 8-inch screen with a DualSense controller, like the grips on either side and the triggers, with all the same functionality of a DualSense controller, mind you. He made sure to clarify that. It's just that with the ability to stream over Wi-Fi via your remote play from your console, your PS5 games. So there is a few stipulations there. You got to be connected to Wi-Fi network. You have to use it via remote play. So your system has to be in standby or in rest mode. So there's a few things there, but still looks like a cool concept. I can't wait to see more. Very interested to see what other details they're going to announce about that. The other half of this announcement was the fact that there's going to be some PlayStation branded earbuds that are going to be kind of the perfect complement to this device. And it can also be used for other Bluetooth enabled device as well. So very interesting to see the details and the specifics of those devices in the coming few. So overall, what were my thoughts? How did I feel? What was the end all be all feeling on this PlayStation Showcase event? Well, I know there's been a lot of flack and negativity online surrounding it. And look, you know, my thing is at the end of the day, did I get some things that I wanted? Yes. Were there things that I didn't get? Yes. But overall, I would say, and the things that I did get, were they amazing? Were they awesome? It was a mixed bag, gamers, ultimately, is where I'm coming from. For me, my interests and my perspective, it was kind of a mixed bag. So I thought it was a solid showcase. I didn't think it was bad. I didn't think it was amazing. I just thought it was, you know, right down the middle. Pretty solid showcase. Had some cool stuff. Couple surprises here or there. But we'll talk about my missed announcements that I wish we had gotten at the end of the show. So that's what my thoughts were on this year's PlayStation Showcase event. Now let's open up my captain's log and see what games I've been playing. Gamers, this past week I didn't have as much playtime in between episodes to discuss with you, but I was able to get another 5 hours of progress into Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Gamers, the 5 hours that I put into Jedi Survivor this past week, they were what I would consider a very productive 5 hours. There is a lot to do in this game, and I say that in a good way. I love the amount of content that is there. I mean, it's just awesome. And all of it, as I've stated before throughout my different Captain's Quarters episodes, as I've taken you on this journey with me, everything seems very purposeful. Everything has a purpose. Every collectible, there's always a second meaning behind, it's not just this picture of 50 of these items that you see that you pick up while you're exploring the world. Like, there's actual purpose to everything. So bottom line, what I did in this short Captain's Log segment here, I was really focused on cleaning up, as I would call it, Kobo, and getting 100% completion on the planet of Kobo. 100% exploration, all the chests, all the collectibles, trying to knock out all the legendary enemies that were there. And I was very close to reaching that goal by the time I hit this recording session. I am at 99.3% complete on Kobo. I literally have two chests. And as far as I know, there's one legendary enemy fight. I don't know if there's any more that's going to pop up between now and finishing the main story or post-game. But I know of at least one more fight that I have left on Kobo that would be a legendary enemy. But regardless, I mean, I'm literally right there. And the 5 hours, what I did during that time to get to that percentage, I did some more vast exploration in all the different areas of Kobo that I had not yet gotten access to through an ability that you get pretty much at the end of your main story progression of Kobo, where you can kind of use the grappling tool that you have to be able to latch onto these, what I just call them air balloons. That's what they are to me. They're like little air balloons that float out in the middle of the air, and you can grapple onto them. And you basically have to hold down the left trigger or L2 on PlayStation. And you have just a few seconds to line up where you want it to launch you to. And then you just kind of can use those springboard from each one to each one, or get to a new previously inaccessible cliffside, or so on and so forth. Well, let's just say that there was a lot of those spread throughout Kobo. And because I was able to now explore those different areas, I was extremely excited to finally get them off my map, to be honest with you. And some of these came with some cool upgrades or just skill points. There was access to new force tears. I did do a new force tear that was a combat-related one. And there was also a platforming related one. So the platforming one, of course, if you've been following me along, you know that I hate those, that they're very frustrating. And oh man, this one was no different, but I stuck with it and eventually was successful. But oh man, the frustration to get to that point. And the combat one really wasn't too bad. I think it took me 2 tries. I completed it on my 2nd try. But the biggest thing to me that I thought was awesome that I did this past week, and it was almost my highlight of the week, but there was something else that just had to take its place, and you'll see why in the next segment. But there is a underground area, I'll say, that has 7 different consoles. And if you haven't seen it online or don't know what I'm talking about, there are 7 consoles in this underground chamber, and each console starts out the game red. But as you complete the different High Republic Jedi meditation chambers that are spread throughout Kobo, all 7, by the way, are on Kobo, each meditation chamber represents one of those consoles. And you basically unlock an upgrade for BD1 by doing and completing all 7 of the meditation chambers, going back to this underground chamber, and then there's a console you can interact with BD1 and get you that upgrade. And essentially, the upgrade allows you to see, ironically, upgrades on your map screen. So now you have icons that'll show you if you missed any upgrades throughout the course of your exploration. But let me just say, finding that last meditation chamber was absolutely insane. There is a lot of trial and error that you have to do to try to figure out, or at least for me, trying to figure out how to get there. It's on a cliffside. If you know where if you played the game, there's an area where you have to fly holding on to the bottom of those giant bat-looking creatures that you can use to get from high vantage points down lower or to other high vantage points. But the thing is, they constantly are descending. So in this area, there are like air geysers that are pushing up air that allow you kind of like an updraft and keep these keep you afloat up in the air and keep you continuing to glide. So you have to use those and kind of finesse that. And you can see on one of the cliff sides, there's actually a small little pathway that if you really look, you finally, at least for me, could find it. And you have to use the flying beast to get down there and drop you down there. But once you get there, you see that, okay, the final meditation chamber location in every meditation chamber, there is a specific Jedi looking statue that raises up and it gives you your reward essentially for completing the chamber. Well, you can see that on the other side of this black overgrowth that is kind of what I referenced earlier in a previous episode, where BD1 now has this ability where he can shoot out this liquid spray that when it hits a certain energy beam that you can utilize in puzzles, it will form crystals that you can then use with BD1 kind of spraying that spray in a trail form in a direction to where that overgrowth is, and then it will eat and destroy the overgrowth. Well, the big thing was trying to figure out how to get past this overgrowth, and I finally did it, but let me just say it took a while. And to give you a free buried treasure gaming tip this week, you have to utilize at one of the top cliff areas on the opposite side of the map. There's multiple areas where you can aim these energy beams, and the one opposite that cliff is the one that you're going to need to aim at the ground of the entrance to that tiny little pathway that I was talking about where the flying beast will drop you off at. And that way you have access for BD1 to use his liquid to guide in a path to the overgrowth to give you access to this final chamber statue. And for me, this was the final chamber. So I was excited. I got me a trophy. I got the reward for getting the chamber completed. And then I was also able to go to that underground area where the consoles were and get the upgrade for BD1. So it was all a 3-for-1 deal for me. So that was exciting. But other than that, I got to share with you, above all else, what I did in the game that was my highlight of the week. Gamers, I may not have played a whole lot of Star Wars this past week, but I played enough to have a pretty exciting moment happen for me. So there is an enemy within Jedi Survivor that is called the Spawn of Ogden. If you played Jedi Fallen Order, then immediately upon seeing this enemy, you are going to be pretty oh man, are you serious? In Jedi Fallen Order, at the beginning of the game, there is this massive frog creature that you can kind of go off the beaten path a little bit into a cave and find him. And he is an absolute pain. I mean, he was the toughest enemy at that point in the game. It was kind of a level set from the developers to the players, in my opinion, of like, hey, this is not going to be just a run around button mashing, swinging lightsabers. You're going to have to strategize in every combat encounter, or at least pay attention to a good extent. So it kind of became this infamous enemy encounter for the game, and memes and everything like that. So the developers, again, think they're pretty slick and funny, and they brought in the spawn of Ogden as a new enemy type, or a legendary enemy for you to fight in Jedi Survivor. And it's Ogden is the name of the original enemy type in Jedi Fallen Order. And so in this game, I have numerous times before this past week gone to fight Ogden and had to walk away after numerous beatdowns. But finally, this past week, if you have not already gone to that conclusion, I was finally successful in defeating the spawn of Ogden. And I gotta tell you, it was a very, very fulfilling experience, a very satisfying experience, and one that I could not wait to share with you in my highlights of the week. Now let's open up a chest of buried treasure gaming tips I have for you in Star Wars Jedi Survivor. To kind of double down on my excitement in defeating the spawn of Ogden, as not just my highlight of the week, I also wanted to share with you my tips on how I was able to defeat the spawn of Ogden. So maybe it'll help you out if you were struggling as much as I was. So the key thing to remember is when you go to the spawn of Ogden, he's at the fort location on the planet of Kobo. And there is a retractable roof that essentially when you go towards the centermost point of it, the roof is going to automatically open and drop you in there with him. And he's going to kind of come slurking out from behind in the shadows in the back of the little pit area. And ultimately, he is a pretty quick creature for being as kind of a big and bulbous as he is. So what you're going to want to do is kind of remind yourself, don't try to be quick about it. You're going to want to slow down a little bit to just make sure to be purposeful with your parries and blocks, and also utilize the slowdown time feature as far as one of the Jedi Force abilities you can do by clicking in the two analog sticks. And the reason I say that is because that is huge in allowing you an opportunity to run behind the spawn of Ogden and just kind of go ham on them. Now, my recommendation and what I ended up using as far as lightsaber stances for the fight, the main one I just stayed through the whole time was dual wield. So not double bladed lightsaber stance, but the dual wield where you have two individual lightsabers, one in each hand of Cal's. So that is the stance that I used. And in addition to not only the stance, but also the stance force moves. So on PlayStation, you hold down triangle to use force moves. And when you do that, you also can use and hold down the square button to do a special move as well with that specific lightsaber stance. And in this one, there's also a different opportunity for you to increase the combo count, but be careful because Ogden, the spawn, will attack you mid-combo. But there is one that if you tap square once or twice, pause for a second or two, and then continue tapping square, there's going to be a massive flurry of blade attacks that just do a mass amount of damage. So for me, utilize that slowdown time feature, incorporate your force abilities with that lightsaber stance. Any lightsaber stance's force ability will probably work and be suffice if you do not like or use the dual wielding stance. But in addition to this, there is a one-hit kill that this spawn has where it flicks out its tongue, and if it latches onto you, that's it. Game over. There's no healing or attempt to get away or anything like that. It's immediately death. So in order to make sure that you avoid that tongue flicking out, what I would suggest and what I learned is it's not always just enough to tap circle on PlayStation to dodge, you know, left or right. You can dash left or right or backwards or forwards, but you obviously don't want to go forwards. So what I would recommend is definitely dash to the left or right, but also jump and air dash out of there as well. Just get out of there any which way you can, but don't forget to jump because that's huge. Ogden, the spawn of Ogden, remember, he's on the ground. His tongue flicks straight ahead and he's not going to flick upward in the air to get at you. So if you can jump and then dash away quick enough, you should be good to go. You kind of rinse and repeat these. Watch out for obviously his unblockable red moves, and then make sure to time your parries perfectly with his kind of a double jab, if you will, where he does a double bite move where it's like lunge, bite in quick succession. If you time it, the parry perfectly, then you can kind of stagger him for a couple seconds. So you implement all this together and you should be able to take down the spawn of Ogden. Now it's that time of month where I take a look back and look at my trophy level progress and gamer score quest goals and give you gamers the update on where I'm at and if I was successful and the goals that I gave myself last month. First up is the trophy level progress. Gamers, this month it is a little bit later than normal as far as when I get my goal updates out to you guys. And so with that being the case and just kind of honestly, it's been kind of a struggle to implement those goals mid-month over the last couple of months. So what I'm going to do is going forward, those updates, the trophy level progress and gamer score quest goal updates are actually going to be in the back end of the month. So typically the probably last episode of a given month is when I'm going to reveal and update my goals and those categories. So starting this month, it gives me a fresh month from now until the end of June, which is when my next update will be. Now, looking back at last month, my trophy level was 234, 6% towards trophy level 235, and I had given myself a goal of reaching 235. And the reason why is because I knew that going into Star Wars, I was probably going to be focused on that a lot. It was going to be a lengthier experience for me, so I didn't know exactly how many opportunities outside of that game that I was going to have to be able to unlock trophies and therefore advanced levels. So I didn't want to put myself in a position to where I'm setting up for failure. So that's why I stayed at 235 instead of going to 236. Question is though, was I still able to be successful in reaching trophy level 235? Well, it has been a little bit longer of a period of time, but I still would have completed my goal regardless of what time of the month I released this information, because I unlocked 47 bronze trophies and 3 silver trophies to bring me to a trophy level of 235, 90% to 236. So I only need like roughly 3 bronze or a silver and a bronze or so on and so forth to reach that level 236. So I'm right there. But bottom line is I reached my goal. I did it for the month. I was very excited. So my new goal for the end of June is now going to be a trophy level of 238. Because at this point, I am right there at trophy level 236. And I still have to mop up the rest of the trophies and get that platinum in my pursuit of the platinum in Jedi Survivor. And I feel like with that and what's left in the game, I feel like I'm going to probably pretty easily speed through, or what feels like speed through, trophy level 236. So I want to be able to give myself a little bit of a challenge, but not too crazy, because I still have a couple of other games like Hogwarts Legacy I want to finish and the Horizon Forbidden West expansion before getting into Final Fantasy 16 and losing myself to it at the end of the month. So we'll see if I'm able to meet that goal of hitting trophy level 238 by the end of June. So check back next month to see if I was successful in doing so. Now let's go check in and see how I fared with my gamer score quest. Gamers, this past month, I was able to at least get my hands on an Xbox controller. Maybe not as much as I would have liked to, but with Redfall coming out earlier in the month of May, I really did want to give that game a shot and try it out. And especially when all the negativity around it first was at launch, I definitely wanted to give or get my own opinion on it. So I did have some gamer score that I unlocked from it. I also played the Last Case of Benedict Fox, a cool side-scrolling Metroidvania Lovecraftian style game. But was what I did play enough to reach my goal? Well, to start, my gamer score a month ago was 294,175, and I had given myself a goal of 295,000. So not too bad. I just needed 825 gamer score. What I did do is I unlocked 10 achievements for 117 gamer score. So obviously I did not get enough in order to reach my goal. It brought me to a gamer score of 294,292. So yes, you heard that correctly. 117 gamer score now ending in 294, 292. And I gotta tell you, it just kind of drives me insane, gamers, because Back in the day, early 360, gamer score and achievements, they had some really obscure point values. Well, for, well over a decade, there hasn't really been an issue, in my opinion, with the quantity or the point value of the achievement in any game that I've unlocked in that time. Well, go to Redfall, and of course, Redfall is going to be the game that ends up having multiple 17 point and 13 point achievements. Well, I unlocked a 17 point achievement, which skewed the nice rounded even number of my gamer score. So it doesn't bother me, honestly, as much as it would have years ago, but it still kind of sucks because it's like, man, I had an obscure number years ago and had to kind of work my way back and find the right game because I'm not going to play something just to get my score reset evenly. But man, it is what it is. But I didn't reach my goal. So my goal for next month is still going to be to try to reach 295,000 gamer score. So we'll see what happens over the next 30 days. Check back next month to see if I was successful and able to do so. So now let's go check out this week's Captain's Decree. Gamers, there was still a lot to enjoy and appreciate about what was shown off at the PlayStation Showcase event, as I discussed at the beginning of the episode. But there were a few announcements that I was really hoping that we would get that we did not. So in this week's Captain's Decree, I will state the three announcements that we did not get that I really wanted to see more than any others. So the first one would have to be a gameplay reveal and just some kind of a release window, not even a specific release date, but at least just a window for Wolverine. And look, I get it. Insomniac, they're doing that, and Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 2 is their big game this year. You don't necessarily want to cannibalize yourself by promoting two of your internal games. But at the same time, I feel like Wolverine and Spider-Man 2 can support themselves on their own. They're self-sufficient. I don't feel like one will be less successful because of the other. If in this context, you know, at the beginning of the show, maybe you show off Spider-Man 2 because we already know pretty much a lot of details about that. And then at the end of the show, maybe you end it with, instead of the gameplay montage or gameplay sequence of Spider-Man 2, you have not necessarily something like that for Wolverine, but even just a gameplay trailer and kind of an idea or understanding of what we're going to get from a story perspective. That is something that I've really been wanting. And then like a fall 2024, you know, or something like that. I don't, but just anything for Wolverine would have been massive. So I was hugely disappointed to not see any updates for that. And now as we move into the second most anticipated announcement that we didn't get for me, I really, 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 really wanted to see some kind of a tease for Ghost of Tsushima 2. That was my game of the year, gamers, a couple years ago when it first released. And I want the next major chapter in Jin Sakai's saga. I want to see something about it. Like, we know that it's in development, I get it, but I want to see what we can expect from that next installment. When there's a any kind of a possible time window, again, maybe 2025, probably at this point, I would say at the earliest, but oh man, I wanted that tease of Ghost of Tsushima 2 or Ghost of Tsushima Jin's next journey or, you know, something. But Ghost of Tsushima 2, something that game related. And my third and final most anticipated announcement that we did not get, honestly, I really wanted to see an announcement, a confirmation, anything for Grand Theft Auto 6. I have been so hyped to see this next gen or current gen now version of Vice City, which is kind of almost been but confirmed that that's going to be where this next game takes place. I just want to see it. Like, I got myself really hyped for it a couple weeks ago with an image that I'd seen traveling around social media and the rumors about surfing and fishing being involved in the game. And I'm just like, man, I really hope that Sony teases this and shows it off and announces it at this showcase event. And we got nothing. So, you know, I get it. Rockstar is on their own kind of timetable and they're not going to show it until they're ready to show it. And who knows exactly how far along in development it is, but I feel like we are very close to seeing something. And I really thought with PlayStation and Rockstar's relationship and just the history of Grand Theft Auto on PlayStation consoles, I really thought we were getting that at this showcase event. So I was extremely disappointed when we didn't see anything about it. So that was the top three games that announcements that I wish we had gotten that we didn't. But I gotta say, I still enjoyed the show and cannot wait to see what other surprises and announcements we have yet to know about that are coming in the year ahead. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com or search for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. You can also find me on social media on Instagram as well as on Twitter at lostatseagamin1. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.